And we are back to talk about the latest, greatest, maybe not greatest, but the newest popular show in the news lately, Fallout on Prime. It released all in one go. A lot of people thought it was going to be very bad, and to everyone's surprise, it is now considered one of the best video game adaptations of all time. It's up there with Last of Us and, in my opinion, the first Mortal Kombat film. Of course, I'm joined here once again by Preston Jacobs and special guest Mr. Ness from the Comics Wiki YouTube channel. Hello, my friend.
Hello.
It's been a minute since we've had you on. For those of you who don't know, Mr. Ness here is my Marvel expert, but he's also a gamer who has played Fallout multiple for many years, actually.
Yeah, I've played Fallout 1, 2, New Vegas 3, 4, and 76 and Tactics, actually.
And I'm you play 76? Huh.
Yeah, I'm not a fan, but, you know, I play it. So,
I have no idea. I have no idea what you guys are talking about. My voice, by the way, is rough because I've had a cold and I kind of blew up my voice. But I'm the resident. I have not played Fallout, and so I kind of feel like I don't know. I liked the show a lot, and I didn't feel I was really like biased by, this didn't follow this and this, or I wasn't distracted by stupid Easter egg culture of shows, you know, people are like, oh my God, Easter egg, Easter egg, Easter egg. Oh my God, that's so awesome. Or, oh my God, they referenced this game. You know, I just saw it as the show and it was really good, you know?
I mean, I saw the in my face references to the game. But for the most part, pretty much everything on screen is an Easter egg. Like it's a feast for the eyes for all these Easter egg reviewers. I'm sure people are making like 30 things you didn't notice in the scene. There's like bobbleheads and Cram and fucking stupid shit like that. But yeah, like they did really good. That's all I can. And I feel like I went into it not really thinking about Fallout. I just kind of was watching the show and stuck in the moments of the show. So I kind of agree with that, where it's like, I know I was being biased because I love this franchise and I had rose-tinted glasses on, but it felt like I was being unbiased, to be honest.
Well, I mean, I will say that, having no biases, I will say that it's not a perfect show, but it's a really, really good show.
Yeah.
And I will say that I have a theory on why it's so good. I think the big elephant in the room is it's Jonathan Nolan, and this is essentially, we were just watching Westworld again, but so he had kind of the plot down already and he was recreating it, but just changing the setting slightly for Fallout. So in many ways, if you're a Jonathan Nolan fan, you're watching Jonathan Nolan do what Jonathan Nolan does. Because, I mean, when you consider it, okay, Westworld is a post-apocalyptic world in which a evil hyper-capitalist organization like uses science without thinking about the ethics and results in a Western post-apocalyptic world where there are morally ambiguous characters, including a Man in Black type of character.
Oh my God. I didn't realize it. That it didn't click until you just said it. He was the perfect person for this.
And on top of that, there's a timeline. There's timeline confusion.
Oh no. Yeah. That's, I can clear that up. That's dumb. Fallout fans don't know how to read timelines.
No, but, but I mean, but you know, in the show, as a watcher, in Westworld, there's timeline confusion, and in the show, there's timeline confusion, right? So when I was watching the show, the first thing I kind of said to Carmine was, "Why are they eating spam? It's been 200 years." And he's like, "There might be some explanation to that." And I was like, "Really?"
They just eat a lot of old pre-war food they find. It's kind of like a staple in the lore.
Right, but it doesn't quite make, I mean, so that was the first sense though that I got that like, and of course, like you've eventually, like Maximus has memories of the war, and then you realize there's been two wars. And that there's, And that's the confusion. Like, where on the timeline are you? Which war are we talking about? But also, even before the 200 years passed, it was already a neo-futurist world where they had, you know, robots and all sorts of biotech and stuff like that. So maybe canning facilities for spam were able to make them last longer or something like that. I mean, you could come up with something like that. That we're not talking about our world where spam would last, like, maybe you could get spam to last 30 years in a can. Their spam could last 200 years in a can because they have more technology than we do.
See, I think for this universe specifically, that's where the suspension of disbelief needs to come in. Because this is built, this whole franchise is based on stories like A Boy and His Dog, The Day After, the you know, like the nuclear film. Le Jeté.
I've seen them all.
Okay, so it's based on those. And so they did place the video game initially, like, I think the first one's like 2120-ish. So it's like only like 50, 60 years after the war. And they really wanted to catch that aesthetic.
For those that don't know, like, what Ness is talking about, like, A Boy and His Dog is a today it's only like a cult sci-fi movie. Yeah. Like, not many people actually watch it, but A Boy and His Dog, like, if you know Mad Max, there would be no Mad Max without A Boy and His Dog. Like, A Boy and His Dog is the first movie where you have this kind of solitary man walking across a post-apocalyptic desert having adventures with, you know, crazy people and mutants. Okay, it, like, invented the genre. It's a young Don Johnson and a dog that he has a telepathic connection with, and it's dark.
What's it called?
A Boy and His Dog?
It's called A Boy and His Dog, but you can find it now by going Vic and Blood is what they call it now.
Really?
Yeah, they changed the name somewhere in the 80s or 90s. But yeah, if you That's read so the book, weird. It's very, very similar to classic Fallout and the vibe that they were trying to go for. And you can actually spot a poster alluding to A Man and His Dog right behind Howard Cooper as he's walking down the stairs of his house in like episode 5 or 6. So when I saw that, I realized, oh, so the executive producers, writers, they are aware of the cultural influences that led to Fallout. Yeah. So I kind of gave him a little bit of slack in that case.
Oh, wow. This is a 1975 film. Interesting. Yeah. I've never heard of this before.
Yeah. Years before Mad Max. Like,
and then
yeah.
have you seen La Jete?
I have not. I've not seen that. Yeah, no.
So Tim Kaine, the creator of Fallout, he recommends most people watch this ancient movie. I think it's like in the 60s or something. Let me check. 1962. And it's about this man that lives in a post-apocalyptic universe and keeps using these like glasses to try to go back before the bombs, stop the bombs. And he said that was very, very heavily influenced on Fallout. If anybody out there or you guys watched that movie, you'll see there are some very like clear-cut things that they've taken from that movie to put into this universe. I think that they were really just trying to go for a mix of all of these vibes, and they were willing to suspend their own disbelief for this story. And then, you know, for, you know, like 50 years-ish later, like to 60, eating like spam out of a can it's not too crazy. But then we get to the Bethesda Fallouts where it's 200 years later and they don't really change up the items in it and whatnot. So it just becomes part of the lore that it, I guess, some sort of radiation, because you do get radiation from eating it, so maybe some radiation seeped in, saved it from being spoiled or something. Radiation in this universe like has some crazy effects on things and people. But yeah, I definitely think the strongest storyline was the vault, which makes the most sense in terms of the lore.
It's strange. Like, I did think there were some odd tonal shifts. Where it kind of goes serious then comic then serious then comic depending on the episode though. It's not even like depending on the scene or something. Like, it's depending on the episode where, you know, it's like the first episode's very serious and then all of a sudden it becomes goofball and then it gets serious again. And so that kind of struck me, but I mean, I could understand having tonal shifts between worlds, like starting with Lucy and then it being goofy and then going to Maximus and being serious. But it was more like episodes. Like, it was odd because it was like Maximus had such a serious story and then he shows up and he's a bumbling idiot, you know, in Philly and stuff, like doing comical stuff. And I was like, huh, that's a little weird. But yeah. I mean, Sorry, guys. But for this is all like minor stuff. It's a fucking wonderful show. Every moment I was on the edge of my seat, I wanted to watch more and more. I guess I wish Lucy's brother had a little more to do. You know, I really like when he was like discovering secrets and uncovering stuff. I wanted him to have a little more agency. Like he was actually doing something clever rather than just like running into a vault pretty much, you know? I wanted something more with his story. I thought that was a little wasted, but otherwise it was a load of fun.
I
thought Vault 4 was really into it. Was quite a funny bait and switch where you're expecting something to be sinister and it turns out no, they were actually just really good people.
You know? Yeah, that was a pretty good. Yeah, no, that got me. As for the vault, like not having much going on, I think that's kind of the magic of most vaults. Is like for example, a lot of the stuff you're saying is actually catering to the people who want the show, like right, like yeah. the gamers, right? So a lot of Fallout is you go do a very serious mission and then, you know, you walk off and then you get this really silly side quest, you know, like, and then you go back, you get another really serious mission, you get another goofy side quest, another serious mission. And so like, that's kind of the vibe of the game. It started as a dark comedy. As for the vault, I think that the magic of most of the vaults, especially in the games, and they transferred it well to show, was you get in there and it's subtly creepy. You're aware that there's something going on. But the deeper right. that you go into it, the deeper that you keep walking through the vault, the more you start exploring the terminals, the more you start to get the context of what really happened in this vault. And I think they yeah. captured that process that the gamers go through and that I've gone through like a billion times perfectly on screen. Like that's how it feels, especially when you're in a gated community like a vault where everybody's keeping an eye on each other. Like this kid really had to go out of his way to get into 32 and 31.
Right.
And that's what I found ambitious. He's not even a surface dweller. He's a vault dweller and he's willing to do side quests down there. Like that's kind of crazy to me.
Right. I mean, there were some really interesting moments where I wanted to get back to his storyline because, you know, I'm like, oh, the discovery that that Vault 32 was killed 2 years earlier. Like what's going on? How did the Raiders get in? Why are they keeping the Raiders alive in their prison? And then why did they get murdered? Like there's a lot of like, he's constantly being like, huh, all of this is very creepy. Not all of it makes sense. Like he was suspicious of why they were kept alive. And then he was suspicious of why they were killed. And you're like, well, you can't be suspicious of both. Like,
you know, I will agree with that. I think that was a little unnecessary. But
well, actually, there's a couple of plot holes in here I wanted to get into. Was there one thing you wanted to finish up with, Mr. Ness?
All in all, good show. They didn't retcon New Vegas. Everybody can calm down. The NCR was already weakened by House, so
actually, you know what?
That, calm down.
I don't want you to skip on this because real quick, let me just explain the controversy behind that. So. Mm-hmm. And you can correct me if I'm wrong about this, Ness. Yeah. So from what I understand people were complaining about is at the very end of the show, it looked like New Vegas was destroyed. Yes. However, people love that game, Preston. And the thing about New Vegas is like I explained to you on Facebook call a while ago, and I'll explain to the audience here as well. Bethesda, who makes the Fallout games now, they didn't make New Vegas. Obsidian did. And Obsidian did such a great job with New Vegas that when Bethesda came back and put out a new Fallout game, most of the people were like, this is okay, but can you just make New Vegas 2? That was really good. Can you do that again?
That you're also leaving out is that the original team that made Fallout 1 and 2 Interplay were at Obsidian, who they passed the license to at the time. So the original Fallout guys got to kind of work on Fallout, from my understanding. Bethesda let them borrow the IP and they made the superior Fallout game and they gave it back. So that's kind of why people were like, don't touch it. That's beloved, you know?
Well, that's why people were thinking that Bethesda was being petty and douchey by trying to wipe away the legacy of New Vegas by nuking it in the show, just like they nuked Shady Sands. Yeah. There is a couple of plot holes here that kind of just, like, one of the main ones, because you were talking about the vault, and I want to start with the vault stuff. So one of the major plot holes here is that Moldaver, she's friends with Rose. It's almost implied they have some type of, like, romantic relationship, but whatever. Why would Moldaver take raiders into Vault 33 and unleash them on everybody, potentially almost hurting and killing Rose's kids?
So I think that's where some of the controversy starts, is Moldaver, from what I got out of the ending, is that she's supposed to be some sort of NCR, right? Is that correct?
I don't know if Moldaver is, like, everything with regard, like, I would say the biggest plot holes that I saw were regarding her. Like, I don't understand how she's still alive.
Okay. Yeah, exactly. Like, that's another one.
Like, cryo vault. She's
right, like, but definitely. But who's cryo vault? She was leading the communists against the capitalists when we last saw her.
She could have been unfrozen. Like, okay, so this is where I was talking to Carmine about it. Was Moldaver, right? Everybody, I think I've heard this from a couple of people. How did she get in the wasteland if she's pre-war, right? And there's only really two or three ways. Time travel with the Wild Wasteland perk, which is not canon. There's becoming a ghoul, and then there's cryo storage. Cryo storage isn't specific to one vault. It's not specific to just what's the vault in the show, 3 or 4? Right, or 33?
4.
Right?
I mean, one could explain, like, that the reason that they worship her in Vault 4 is that she went to Vault 4. And she was cryo sleeping in she would have been cryo sleeping before. But we know we met the scientists from Vault 4 beforehand, and they were definitely super with Vault Tech.
She was definitely okay in my head. She for sure was definitely a Vault Tech employee that has been radicalized by the Wasteland. She most likely came out of the same pods that Hank came out of. Like, even though we saw the names on them, her real name probably isn't Moldaver. She's probably like one of those names. Maybe she's further in one of the pods that were open. But I think that she went out after being, you know, maybe overseer, or maybe they had a specific vault tech mission for her, because all vaults are experimental, and she was sent over to 4. Or 4 had, you know, because you can see in that boardroom at the very end where everybody's kind of arguing over what they want their vault to be. All of those are canon. So every vault is an experiment. It's not really that far of a belief system to say, oh, okay, Vault Tech wanted one of their employees from pre-war to take control of a vault as an overseer 200 years later. So we're going to build one cryo storage for the most important Vault Tech employee. So that's kind of where I'm at. I think that she just came from a cryopod, and she's probably in the different part of Vault Tech that wants to control the world, where Hank wants to control the world as well, and they're in a weird war.
Here's the thing. It's not that it's not possible that she somehow ended up in a vault cryopod, but we need to see that. You know, that needs to be season 2 immediately. But the thing is, her character dies at the end, so I'm like, are they even going to bring her back? Because when we saw her back in pre-war times, she was the leader of the communists and against Vault Tech. And so we have to explain how she gets from being the enemy of Vault Tech into a Vault Tech cryo chamber, and then escapes that Vault Tech cryo chamber to start Shady Sands.
I mean, I imagine she could even be, like, they probably could be saving it for season 2, because she could just be a force of Robert House. Like, she could come from a cryo vault under Lucky 38. So, I mean, that's a good point. I didn't even realize that. It's like, how did she, we need to see it. Yeah, and they did kill her. So I really hope in season 2 they at least explore her backstory, or just give us a one-off line to satisfy most people.
I mean, there's a lot of mysteries with the ghoul. Like, how did he go from, we still don't know how he goes from being married and to single dad with the kid to searching for his family, meaning his wife and the kid. Like, had he not said his family and just said his daughter, I would have been like, well, yeah, he grabbed the kid and they got divorced and they were out of there.
It
like
that would just be the logical thing. That the wife took the kid to a different vault or something, or like exited the vault early.
Right.
Or even went into a vault and left him outside of one or something.
But he was already labeled as a communist and exiled from Hollywood doing birthday parties. So like with the daughter. So, you know, is Vault Tech really going to tolerate her being married to a communist, a known communist? You know, that kind of thing. So there's a lot of explanation that needs to be done with the ghouls plot
too. So far, two plot holes you've mentioned. Moldaver surviving, how that happened. And two, how did this whole situation with I want to like tag in another plot line with you about that you're bringing about Cooper and his family. What if Barb, Cooper's wife, part of Vault-Tec, if she's the first one to bring up the idea of dropping the bombs. If she knew when the bombs were going to drop, why would she let her daughter out there with the father?
They were definitely already separated at that point.
Right. But the daughter? Condemned
they say
daughter?
They have a little bit of a... The daughter, I imagine she's just with her dad like on a Sunday, right?
But also like why when he knows that nuclear war is going to happen very soon, is he even still chilling around like Los Angeles doing birthday parties?
Okay. Imagine the one you love said that. Do you'd probably think you could talk her out of it, right? So like, here's my thing. He probably still wants to be around his kid. He probably thinks his ex-wife really isn't that evil. And he's sitting there doing the kids' birthday parties. They say, I think in the beginning, to pay alimony, right? So I don't think it's a stretch to, because the little girl asks about that in the very beginning.
Pay alimony to his incredibly rich wife. Yeah.
Yeah. It's pretty funny. I like
that. Well, what I'm saying about like Barbara is, why would she pick a day?
I don't think she picked the day.
They probably betrayed her.
There needs to be betrayal. Well, Barb.
She's not the top of Vault-Tec. She was just representing Vault-Tec in the board meeting. And there was like two Vault-Tec employees. You remember you pointed out the guy that's like in a silhouette above them watching? That's probably the leader of Vault-Tec.
Oh, I see.
And so the bomb dropped on October 26th, so I was like, I don't know if she really knew or chose that date.
She probably didn't. You're right. She was probably betrayed as well, which that will need to be answered in season two. But speaking of which, if Vault 31 has all the Vault-Tec execs for management or whatever, and Hank comes from that vault, how come he didn't recognize that Moldaver was probably not someone from Vault 31?
I started to realize that he was probably a house. She was probably like somebody from an outside source. Like maybe she was stored somewhere else.
You're not just Hank. You're right. Every single, if only Vault 31 execs are in charge, every single Vault 31 person would immediately know that that's not Vault 32, that those aren't the leaders.
Like if Moldaver somehow got into Vault 32, okay, fine. She's a part of like, if she's a part of Vault 31 secretly, okay, fine. But she had a bunch of raiders with her. How come he didn't realize like those people that, wait a minute, I'm monitoring Vault 33 and 32. Who are those people?
The only explanation would be like the 31ers wanted the fight to happen, but it was pretty deadly. I mean, the one woman lost an eye.
I don't think that's what the case
Hank's daughter almost died. But you're right. It's a plot hole that if the 31ers should be in charge, they should have been in charge of Vault 32.
Well, the 31ers, they're all asleep. Like, they're all...
Not all of them. The blonde was a 31er. The black woman's a 31er. Hank's a 31er.
Well, they're all in 33, and they're no longer... Like, when you're the overseer, you're a vault dweller inside of a vault, you're not thinking about the other vault. Like, you only think about the other vault when it comes to trade or if they survive or when you're sending messages.
I mean, I suppose that they were execs that never met each other. They could be like, I guess I've never met these execs.
Oh, you mean like they act like they don't know each other. Like you're specifically talking about Betty, Hank, and the blonde lady, right?
No, you're right. Well, Betty, Hank, and the blonde lady are 31ers. But when the 32ers came over, they should have been like, who's your 31? Like, who's the person that was 31? but they don't do that. But I suppose
that's fair.
One could argue that it didn't send a red flag because they just assumed they were from they were from Vault Tech, but a part of Vault Tech that in a different city.
Yeah, and just didn't I'm actually Hank couldn't know every single employee, and also the little brain guy is the one that chose the people to be frozen because it's his experiment. So I imagine there's people in those cryopods that Hank just doesn't know, and he just assumes they are going to become overseers.
That's fair, but you just brought me to another plot hole I just thought of. Clearly, when what's the kid Norman the
Rico from Hannah Montana.
Yeah. Is that who that is?
Yeah, that is.
That's Lucy's little brother, right?
Yes.
When Norman goes and pretends to be Betty and contacting Vault 31, Vault 31 clearly has access to like all the other vaults. Okay, fine. How come Vault 31 and that guy...
Both the other vaults, yeah.
How come... What's that guy's name? Bub Baskins, whatever his name is.
Yeah, he's
the brain in the jar. How come Bud didn't know that Vault 32 was compromised a long time ago?
He was stuck behind the little broom.
No way. That's that answer to that?
Dude, yes, that's the answer.
I thought he only got stuck behind the broom when he was trying to go to the door. I thought he was only stuck behind the broom for like half an hour.
Nah, I think it was definitely like a year or two. Like since the plat person got unthawed, like that would be the most Fallout answer in my opinion.
There is one plot hole people were talking about that actually is answered in the games, which someone said that how the fuck does Lucy's father has like a nuclear stash to drop bombs on Sadie Sands?
I don't know. I can answer that for you.
Oh my
god, yeah.
So in Fallout 76, we find out that a Vault-Tec ordered a number of its agents to secure missile silos after the war so they could take control of the remaining nukes.
Yeah, that's an apple. Yeah, they do that. It's a bad plot, but yeah. So they could have, and those are just like vault dwellers that are going to do it, made by Vault Tech. So a Vault Tech employee would probably put the same like contingency plan in place for himself, right? Also, I think
probably.
You mentioned the NCR or NCR New Vegas stuff. I think a lot of the. Okay, so I remember messaging you about that, actually, where I loved the show so far, and then I saw New Vegas, and I was like, okay, fuck the show, you know? And then they cemented it with the end credit scene where you see destroyed New Vegas. The reason I think a lot of people, including myself, immediately thought New Vegas is destroyed is there's a specific piece of dialogue at the very beginning of New Vegas, and the dialogue is, that New Vegas looks untouched by nuclear warheads and is always a bright, shining beacon of the wasteland. So when you show it on screen and all of the skyscrapers are kind of destroyed, kind of fucked up, it really sends weird signals through the brain, right? Like when you've seen it for at least 10 years of it being not that. And then I try to pull myself out of it by going, oh no, it's not destroyed. And then they cement it with the concept art. Of it, them showing them blowing a hole through the strip and NCR crash and all that. So I remember being outraged messaging you, and I had to watch it again and look for an answer. And I saw like one of the writers be like, oh, no, NCR and New Vegas is not destroyed. We didn't retcon anything. But yeah, I think a lot of people are getting past that, and they're more pissed off about the Shady Sands nuke from what I'm reading online. They're really mad about how weak the NCR is in this.
Well, yeah, that's the thing. So, Preston, basically, people played all these games, and they've grown attached to like these factions.
Yeah. I mean, when he says NCR, he means like the New California Republic, right? Like, acronyms for your game, people. Yeah,
people are like rightly so. I think it was a guy named Will from Texas in my server. He made it sound like imagine in the sequel to Game of Thrones or in House of the Dragon season 2, everything you know about the Night's Watch that you read about, that you watched, is all of a sudden changed for no reason. Mm. You know, everything you know about, like, instead of them being like the Watchers on the Wall, they're like this completely different faction doing a bunch of different things.
I mean, I get it. Like, imagine you're doing an adaptation and the wall is shattered. Like, so that's kind of, that would be a big deal, right? I get
it. So here's the deal is, the NCR mm-hmm. is in a state similar to the Night's Watch when the show's coming out. Like, they are down men. They don't have much going on. Like, they've lost the Battle of the Hoover Dam. So people are sitting there thinking that they're, like, a super strong authority in the wasteland, when the New Vegas writers, like, went out of their way. Like, I've found interviews with them, and I'll be having a video about this coming out. They wanted to nuke the NCR off the face of the earth. Like, they really wanted to get rid of the New California Republic, because they felt that by them fortifying and making them stronger, they would take this tone away of being a post-apocalyptia. They were getting too strong. They were starting to make it a republic, right? And so they took measures to weaken them in their game in New Vegas. If you do what people are now considering the canon ending, the house ending, you destroyed those people. They become the Night's Watch, like, where it's like five men training like 17 dudes, you know what I mean? Especially after nuking their
isn't the Brotherhood of Steel technically kind of the Night's Watch with how they do things?
I see what Carmine's saying, but you know, you bring up an interesting thing though, is that eventually enough time passes where you go past the genre, and it's like, yes. I've always been very interested in, and it's never been done, but I've always been very interested in what happens for like a zombie movie after the zombies finally start dying. They finally get to the, like, the decaying point and society has to start up again. Like, what
World War Z,
what does that look like, you know? To be post zombie, the closest we got is like Land of the Dead, where like it's been like 3 years, you know, or I guess in Walking Dead it's now been what, fucking 20 years, and they've been the zombies are still there.
The zombies are still there. The World War Z book by Max Brooks talks about this specifically. The main character is a reporter going around the world interviewing people after the zombie apocalypse, yeah, about how they survived the zombie apocalypse. It's actually a phenomenal read.
Yeah,
so. Oh, yeah, you'd like it. The audiobook is amazing. Mark Hamill's in it. It's amazing. I recommend this to the audience, too. Right. World War Z, the book.
But but eventually, if you're getting to the point where you're post-zombie, it's no longer a zombie movie, right? So, like, you're talking about this post-apocalyptic chaos movie where everyone's fighting, and you're like, oh, if you get to the point where civilization is actually getting to be rebuilt and there's not chaos, you're going past the actual like genre,
which is what they did in the last episode, funnily enough. Like, even though the writers in New Vegas didn't want it. So, like, here's my point. They took stuff that was cut on the New Vegas room floor, right? The writers of New Vegas, like, or the writers of the show were like, what did the New Vegas guys not? I don't know if they went over there and asked, but they came up with the same exact idea that those guys have. So if the New Vegas guys were to wipe them off the face of the earth, in positive, people would be like, fuck yeah, Chris Avalon's the shit. I love Josh Sawyer. But if the Fallout TV show does it, it's garbage, it's propaganda, it's got an agenda, it's Bethesda being petty. You know what I mean? You see what I'm saying?
Right, here? Right. Yeah.
So it's kind of like, it's just really frustrating, right? And also at the end, what I'm referencing by, now we're past a post-apocalypse, is when Cold Fusion started, my mouth legitimately dropped when I saw the lights start coming on. Because that's not a... Like, yeah, we have, like, little structures. In Fallout 3, there's Tenpenny Tower, which is this little hotel skyscraper in D.C. that they turned the power back onto and kind of reconstructed for people to live there as a civilization community place. But it's isolated. It's its own thing. Or, you know, you could build your settlement in Fallout 4 or Fallout 76 and put some lights up in it with a base generator. But for the electrical, like, grid to come back of the lights come on, that's a very, very big deal. And this is canon to what's coming next. So I don't know how we're going to do this. Or if it's just the West Coast, maybe.
Yeah, I will say, I mean, I thought that each of the characters in the story has a pretty interesting journey where, you know, we start with Lucy, and Lucy, you know, wants to go back to her. The only thing she wants is to, like, get her dad and go back to her life in the vault. And then she comes to the end of her journey and she realizes that, you know, there's no going back. And she wants to find out the truth instead. And then we have Maximus who like only wants like to be accepted by the Brotherhood and things like that. And then when he finally achieves it, he realizes that he kind of doesn't want that.
Well, the problem with Maximus is he wants to be a knight without doing any of the hard work of being a knight. And then in the end realizes that that's not the way to become a knight, I think.
Right.
Because he's like shitty brain rot wasteland guy. But go on.
But what I appreciate is that both characters, in a sense, got what they wanted and then realized that they didn't want what they wanted. You know, Lucy did find her dad. Maximus did achieve knighthood and was accepted by the Brotherhood. I will say that the ghoul.
Orange colored sky, just like in the.
Yeah. I guess it's the reference to the beginning song. I will say that one tiny little nit is I don't know why. The head of the Brotherhood all of a sudden is like, yeah, we're going to rule this together. Like, why? Like, why are you sharing the mantle with Maximus of all people who seems like a doofus to me, you know?
And also, it seems like they hate him. Like, the Brotherhood are hard asses and all that, but they are not like that. Like, it's insane to see how they butchered the Brotherhood. Like, I love the Brotherhood while playing it and while reading lore and stuff like that. I think they're assholes, but Jesus Christ. You can see Maximus shaking while he's like, did you put the razor blade in your buddy's fucking boot? And he's like, no, I didn't do that. And you can see the power armor behind him. I imagine, yes, there would be interrogations, and there would be a subsect of them that are kind of shitty people. But, like, holy shit, when they had Michael Rapaport literally tell the vertebrate driver to, like, put me down, I'm bored, I want to shoot something.
I hated
it
that.
Me too. It felt so like just stupid. Just like that was dumb.
They felt, I mean, honestly, the Brotherhood to me felt like they were lifted from Warhammer 40K.
Okay. That's fair. I could see why.
You know?
Yeah.
You know, like just a bunch of like religious grunts, you know?
Yeah, first one. They changed it by three or four. By three or four, they just kind of become a militaristic like group where it's yes sir, no sir, blah blah blah, super
yeah,
everybody's dressed up in outfits and doing stuff. But in the first game, if you go to the Brotherhood of Steel Fort and you ask them about their armor, they'll specifically be like, I feel naked without my holy armor. Like they say they call it holy. And they have a very zealot way of speaking.
Right. I mean, it's a group of religious Marines with space armor that fight mutants. And like,
it's
40K. It's Yeah. How did you, I wanted to ask you guys, and this is a bit of like, I've been hearing people talk about this, but like, the actor for Maximus, Aaron Moten, some people are like, first of all, he looks like the Kang actor, and he has a very similar acting style to the Kang actor, Jonathan Majors. They both have this like smoldering intensity to them, and they also have like jittery, like moments of like insanity and stuff that, you know.
They look very similar when angry too. Like the way they purse their lips and the way they flare their nostrils. Like I'm thinking about when Rapaport was like, you're gonna fucking die out here, bunch of vultures, blah blah blah. Right. And it cuts to Maximus' face really intensely. He does look like he could be the son or even a younger Jonathan Majors. It's
really odd. So because Jonathan Majors is out, like why don't we just fucking hire Aaron Moten to play Kang, man?
Or Dwayne The Rock Johnson, yeah, one of the two.
It's too expensive.
He's so good. No, but I actually hated Maximus, though. Like, legitimately.
I wasn't a fan of his storyline.
I hated him so much. The cock writing was some of the worst writing I've ever experienced. Like, if it did, that did not feel, that felt fucking weird. And
I wanted to ask you about that.
They were trying to add some sex in it. Cause like, obviously, obviously it makes no sense that the ultra conservative vault people would be so open about sex. It just would not. It just would not be the case, right?
I was going to ask you about this, Ness. Like, has Fallout always been so horny? Because I feel like this was, like, unnecessarily horny at times.
In the Wasteland, yes. In the Vault, not so much. In the Wasteland, Like, dude, you should see the amount of nude mods or, like, make the prostitution section of the game, like, functional. Right. It's fucking crazy what people
But, like, various scenes are only funny because you're establishing a hyper-conservative, like, society. Right. So you so for instance, the scene where the cousin is like approached by the one-eyed woman and she wants to sleep with him. And then she asks him to like put on the sweater of her dead husband. That's only funny. That's only funny if you think of them as a hyper conservative, sexually repressed. Like,
yeah, which is how like I society view them because of the game. Right? But they don't come off like that in the show.
But if if Lucy is just like, no, we're all pretty free about sex. Hey, you just want to have sex? Like,
asking people about their sperm count, like willy-nilly.
Right. All this. And keep in mind, this was a woman that was having sex with her cousin, having sex with that character who was very awkward.
And everybody knows, too.
Right. Everybody knows about it. And but at the same time, like, if that guy is – you know, sexually experienced, does it make sense that he was so awkward in that scene? You know, like, it doesn't quite
you gotta
fit,
admit, that, that blonde lady's so pretty, though. I would be so nervous in that scene.
To bag a pregnant one-eyed woman.
Yeah, I'd be like, come here, Cyclops. Like, you know? It's crazy.
So, it's interesting that you like the vault storyline the most. I like the ghoul storyline the most. I thought that was like the most interesting. I don't know. Walton Goggins, he's always in movies, but he's one of those guys where it's like, oh, it's him.
What's the story of him being in the box at the beginning? Do ghouls never die?
So that really bothered me. Ghouls never die, but for some reason, the way that ghouls work, right, is like they can live essentially forever until their brain rots and become feral. And you meet a lot of pre-war ghouls in all the Fallout games. So they added these two lore breaks, I think. If this is already in lore, please correct me in the comments or something, but I'm almost positive it's not. They made it so that they rely on some sort of medicine or radiation. And so it seems to me the ghoul withered up after 118 or maybe, like, because he says his dad worked with him. So 20 years before the story, the ghoul withered up and ran out of that medicine that he's carrying around throughout the show and turned into, like, a shitty corpse. And it looked, I was talking to my friends about this because we grew up on Fallout and we were sitting in my living room just legitimately debating how this could have happened. So what they have plugged into the ground in that scene are rataway packs, which makes radiation go away. It makes no sense to bring the ghoul back to life. So we came up with a theory that maybe, since there's hospitals in almost every city and you can explore them, maybe they got chemotherapy radiation packs and they plugged that into the soil that he was in, irradiated him. Therefore, like, kind of like Three Body Problem, where it's like those little water people that like fill back up with water.
Why, like, are they preserving him? Like, what's for what point? Like, who needs the ghoul?
It seems like he's just the best bounty hunter on the West Coast. Like, he says he does this shit for the love of the game, and he ends up killing them all and saying that they're not worth it, because if you're thinking about doing one last job, then your heart's not in it anymore. So I imagine he was their ace in the hole for this bounty. And so they wanted to revive him. But I really
kills the other bounty hunters, though, right?
You know? Yeah, he just murders them and takes the chicken, which is stupid. I really don't like this, though, because that means that every ghoul I've ever seen is taking medicine to not go feral, or if it's just specifically to him, I don't know. But like, for example, in Fallout 3, you can walk into a bar and there's a bartender, and if you're nice to him, he's a ghoul, and he'll be like, "What the fuck? You're not screaming in my face about how ugly I am and how I'm useless," and you could just treat him like a human, and he starts to give you a discount. I hate to believe that Gob is not being paid by Moriarty, because he's being paid in some sort of radiation medicine. I don't like that idea. I don't like the idea that Hancock, the ghoul, who's your companion in four, has to take this radiation medicine off screen somewhere. So I don't like that whole addition to it. I think it's really useless. The fun thing about the ghouls that are still talking and walking is that they're a ticking time bomb. Any second in the next 50 to 100 years, they can go feral and flip, and your favorite person is just a zombie. And it's really sad, actually. So I don't know. I really do not enjoy that inhaler that he has, and I don't enjoy how they revived him. That stuck in my brain a lot.
So the ghouls, are they created by the gas that Maximus's squire takes?
So the ghouls are created directly from nuclear radiation of the bomb. So like some people's DNA just adapt very quickly to the bomb DNA, like the bomb radiation. So the nuclear bomb is directly resulting in like these strange monstrous creatures that you're seeing, like the Gulper.
Because I thought it was a weird comment when the ghoul tells Lucy that one day you're going to look like me, and she's like,
yeah.
I may one day look like you, but I'm never going to be you or whatever.
She's probably going to be, she's an adventurer. She's probably going to be doused in so much radiation that if there are ghouls from after the war that end up becoming a ghoul from going through radiation. And so he's probably, I think he's just saying, like, you are going to be one of those people that have that will of life in them. Like, you keep fighting, you're going to get radiation, you're going to become a ghoul, you're going to look like me, because everybody ends up doing that unless they die of old age or getting shot in the head out here.
Shit to her. I thought that maybe she was contaminated with something or she was bit by something.
I think
something
he was just talking shit. Yeah. Like trying to scare her, just being like, oh, fuck you, blah, 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 you know? That's kind of the vibe I got from it.
Right. So have you considered that because like ghouls are kind of like mutants because of the radiation, there are different kinds of ghouls, some that need this medicine, some that don't?
Mutants are not by radiation. They're by the FEV virus that was created by the Enclave.
I'm not talking about like the mutant as in like...
about the big green ones. What mutants are you talking about?
Like ghouls, the Brotherhood sees them as mutants is what I meant. But like in regards to like mutation from radiation and stuff like that, and it's just... Don't you think there are different subspecies of ghouls? Some that are like the guy in the bar in Fallout 3 and some that are like Cooper?
Yeah. In Fallout 1, they kind of... explore this a little bit. When you go to Necropolis, there's ghouls that are like exactly just like a Dawn of the Dead type, like zombies. They're like, they're even green and like eat brains and shit like that. Like, so yeah, I do think there are. They're probably just in different subsects of the country, I imagine. Like how different people reacted to the bombs and whatnot, and how different cultures reacted.
And also, to be fair on this, Hancock, the ghoul mayor from Good Neighbor in Fallout 4. Didn't he become a ghoul because of some like experimental drug that was radioactive?
So he's after pre-war, whatever the fuck. But he's not constantly sitting there hitting that drug over and over and over again to stay alive. Mm-hmm. You know what I'm saying?
Hmm.
Yeah.
Like it was just a one-time transformation thing. So like if it was like that, it'd be different, but I don't know.
So I like the Cooper ghoul story. You liked the vault story. Preston, you liked the Lucy stuff?
I wanted to get back to Lucy's brother the most, but in the end, Lucy's brother's plot line kind of fell flat because it didn't end well. So I suppose Lucy's storyline was the best in the end. I mean,
you think Norman's actually story, you're right. Fell flat?
The vault story, yeah, with Norman kind of just ends. He doesn't go back and confronts Betty. We don't see what happens there.
Well, he does leaves. Isn't it implied that he gets inside of one of the cryo chambers?
I mean, I guess that's the option. I mean, we don't know, but
I thought he got into a cryo chamber until season two. That's kind of the vibe I got from that scene.
Well, you know, he definitely walks over and considers it, or you know, we don't know if he's in or not. But
okay,
I mean, obviously,
I wanted to. So, in regards to Fallout coming out all at the same time. We had this discussion last night, Ness, about how you think it's a good thing that the entire show came out at all at once, and I disagree with you. Do you mind if I give my arguments on
the Let me rephrase. I said I like it, but go on.
Yeah, and why I dislike it. Now, I was briefly talking to Preston about this before you joined, and I'll let Preston go into it because I want to bring up something amazing he said to me many years ago. But as a content creator, I feel so fucking bad for people who cover Fallout, and they would love to cover it week after week after week, and it all comes out at once. Right. That sucks for content creators. For fans who are just, you know, the audience, like, I'm sure they love it, but at the same time, in order for the hype to continue, I think it should come out week after week after week. I loved watching episodes of WandaVision and watching everyone on Reddit like theorize what's going down, what's happening. This is actually something Preston said to me many years ago about Fallout, because he watched Fallout week after week as it was coming out. I watched it all. I binged
Westworld,
it all later.
Westworld, yeah.
What did I say?
You said Fallout. Which
understandable. Oh, I'm sorry. I meant Westworld. Preston watched Westworld when it was coming out back in the day, week after week after week. I watched it all like years later in a row. And what were you telling me, Preston? How like everyone was theorizing?
It was so fun. It was so fun, like reading the articles and having people theorize about what was going to happen next. Because there were just surprises every episode. And this is Jonathan Nolan again. And there's surprises every episode. Weird timelines, different theories on who's who, going back and doing people's backstories, like how people got in these situations, like having that unravel and have people discuss it every week would have been so much fun. But it's not what we got.
That's what I'm talking about. That's kind of a shame, because once again, I really wanted it to like continue on week after week after week, so everyone can get in on it. Because here's the other problem that I have. Okay, I slowly watch things, and it sucks that I have to be on a time limit to watch this. Otherwise, everyone's gonna talk about it immediately because motherfuckers out here watching it all in one day. And I like to take my time. I like to sit down, have a meal, watch an episode or two, and then maybe watch one tomorrow. You kind of have to avoid the internet, and I feel bad for those people because, it's some people's got a 9-to-5. Preston here, poor guy, he's got wife, kids, job. He's got to do all this stuff. You don't have time to watch a couple episodes in a row. You got to go to sleep. You got to do this. You got to do that.
Yeah. Oh yeah.
It's a pain in the ass. So yeah, that's where I'm coming from. And why do you think it's better? It came out all.
Yeah.
I
think, just cause I started watching stuff when Netflix started doing that, like with Daredevil. I remember watching all 8, and I was just like, I was blown away a little bit. Like, I didn't have to wait another week, and for me it was like, you talk about it for the next 3 days and it's gone. And that's true, it's out of the zeitgeist, and that is a shame. But I think not waiting for those cliffhangers and just getting a full story is just ultimately more fulfilling in the end, at least for me personally. But I think we found like a common ground, at least, like a good way to do it, like with WandaVision, how they have like they started with 2 to 3 episodes and then they let it be weekly. So it's like it has you on the hook and you have enough story, but weekly is ultimately better, for
That's
the rest
Andor
of the series
did.
To keep it in popularity.
Andor did that. Shogun did that. X-Men did that recently. Bad Batch did that. They're doing
that.
And
look at all of those shows. They're doing great.
So, what did you guys think of the underlying like political messages that kind of appeared in the show?
Pretty spot on with Fallout, I guess.
Oh, it's Fallout. It's just on the same theme as Fallout.
Yeah, that's been their theme since like.
It melds very much with Jonathan Nolan's previous stuff with Westworld. I mean,
I can see
that,
why he like clung to it so hard.
Yeah. I mean, it's a pretty obvious criticism of the military-industrial complex. Like, if it's in people's best interest to have the threat of war, like, what accidentally might tip you a little further? And so this was the same thing, but rather than its weapons, it's the vaults,
Yeah,
but,
to maximize profits, it's like, we drop the bomb.
Right. Though there were some... There were little criticisms of kind of bleeding heart liberalism here and there in the show.
Agreed.
Like when they were trying to treat the Reavers like well, you know, and Raiders so well and so humanely, like everybody in the vault looked like so naive, right? You know,
yeah, that really pissed me off. To be honest.
But it is kind of weird because they're like supposed to be this like hyper conservative 1950s like esque society, and yet they're sitting there being like, oh, maybe we can reform these people, you know? And you're like, huh, really?
Yeah, I don't think so. Those people
at the same time, like they were actually from, because in the end we find out that they're not just raiders on like going place to place. They lived in what's her face's society.
Shady Sands. So that's what bothers me. Is like
that doesn't make sense.
Civilians of Shady Sands, or this is where I can agree with a lot of the fandom. These are either civilians of Shady Sands that are doing this, or NCR, right, or they're just raiders. And the fact that the NCR would do something so egregious, even to just random people, is bullshit. That probably wouldn't happen. And the fact that it would be Shady Sands civilians being so... Okay, you know what? You nuked my town, and a lady came up and said, hey, I know where the guy that nuked your town is staying. Do you want to kill him and his family? I'd go, yeah, let's do it. So,
sure,
from that angle.
Sure, but they were... That was, like, beyond that. They were, like... Even when left to their own devices, like speaking amongst each other, they were a bunch of like savage idiots.
You know? Yeah, like I think they're just raiders, especially the way that they were eating. Like I was able to catch it.
She just hired them as like bounty hunters or something, or like as sellswords.
They're probably loyal to her because she's proved. Yeah, like she's from Young Kai. No, but what's it called? I think that they're just in debt or loyal to her because she's either proven herself as this cold, icy person in the wasteland, right?
Yeah.
Or because she's somebody with a lot of cash.
She took her worst citizens on a suicide mission. She's like, you guys suck and deserve to die. You're going to come with me on my suicide mission.
I mean,
that's another plot hole, because when you get to her like observatory community, everyone in there seems like very chill. They don't seem like
absolutely
dumbass like barbarians. That's the vibe I got. I was like, NCR.
That's the rest of the NCR. So I'm assuming, like, did she just hire a bunch of raiders and just promise them something? Because the Shady Sand survivors, right.
And she's like, one of you needs to be hot. Like that's yep. like
I, yeah. we need one of you to be hot because you're gonna get a clean woman in a warm bed tonight. And that was
maybe that's what she promised them.
Yeah,
Everybody else has to be like borderline passable, too. Though. Yeah. So like no one's missing eyes, no one's missing ears, like that kind
except
of
for
thing.
That dude with like the giant death claw scratch on the back of his head, which is like really telling. Did you guys catch that too? The waiter with the giant three scratches on the back of his head during
I actually didn't see that at all.
I was like, yeah, that was a big red flag. These guys are raiders for sure.
You know, as someone who's played Fallout, I've only played New Vegas in 4. That's the one thing I noticed was missing: mutants. The big orc looking mutants.
Yeah.
And
super mutants were good.
Death claws.
Well,
not super mutants, normal mutants.
I heard that's what's going to happen to the Squire, that he's going to become one of those like big orc mutants.
They're going to hit him with FEV.
Well, the idea is that the fact that they called him a ghoul means he's not a ghoul and that he's something
else.
You mean
Johnny Pemberton, the little, okay. I don't, yeah, yeah. I think he's a ghoul. Also, they added Wolverine healing to ghouls. That was weird.
Yeah,
because
that's why he might not be a ghoul, you know, or whatever.
I think he
might be something else.
I don't think so. I think he's legit just going to become looking like, if you give him 40 or 50 years, not even that. I think like 5 years, he's going to end up looking like what's his name, Cooper Howard, the ghoul. He'll end up looking like him. I think that we just saw for the first time somebody turning into a ghoul. It's like maybe their skin doesn't melt off, and maybe it's literally with radiation in the DNA.
Wait a minute. What if that fucking so the creepy doctor guy? What if when he gave that squire? What's the squire guy's name?
Thaddeus.
Thaddeus. When the creepy doctor guy gave him some kind of like
the chicken fucker, right? The chicken fucker.
The chicken fucker. He gave him some kind of. He gave Thaddeus some kind of ghoulification thing. What if that same doctor gave it to Cooper?
Okay. I think gave it to Cooper, or his wife did.
What if that? There it is. What if like whatever that doctor gave Thaddeus, Cooper took a long time ago, and he's not like the normal ghouls who don't need the medicine to survive, but he does.
If that were happening, all of my complaints about him taking medicine would be out the window. Like, if he was, if he was like deliberately created to be a ghoul and to see the everlasting, like, how the longevity of human, like, lifespan,
the problem is there's an established market for the medicine that he's taking, which makes it seem like there's an entire community of ghouls who are seeking these medicines out.
Which, if you go to Underworld, a Fallout 3 city, none of these ghouls have it for sale, nor do they mention it. Which, don't you think, like, a city of ghouls would be at least have it on, like, their little medical sale market or whatever? Like, so yeah, they changed lore, and then, so you said something that brought my brain to, Cooper Howard, I don't know, I really hope you're right, but I have a feeling that, he kind of probably just, like, was banging on a vault door, trying to get his daughter inside of the vault or something, because he gets away on that horse with his daughter, and I mean, unless Moldaver is his daughter, which it isn't, you know.
That would have been a good
I thought about
twist.
That. The
I thought
time
that. I thought, I thought about that. I thought about that too. I thought, like, but that. Yeah.
But it wouldn't have made sense because we see Moldaver 200 years in the past, and she's like a grown woman, and we also see his daughter as well, unless they were doing a freaky timeline thing.
He has to be like an agent of some individual force. Like, it's
true.
I mean, it's so funny that they took that. Jonathan Nolan took the Man in Black and Maeve and made him the same character.
You're such a dick for ruining that, man. Like, now I can never unsee that. Dude, as soon as you started pointing it out, I was like, oh my God, it's falling into place.
I'm going to be like, what? The ghoul has a daughter? I didn't know that. You know, it's going
to
be like,
what do you mean
that
he used to be a good guy and this changed him? Oh my God.
Because you keep mentioning Westworld, before we wrap this up, Jonathan Nolan, during when Fallout was about to come out, he did an interview with The Hollywood Reporter in which he said he hopes to finish Westworld. Preston and I, for whatever the fuck reason, hopeful optimism, was where we were hoping as the new Fallout season, Westworld seasons were coming out, that they would be better and back to form, back to season one, which I think is some of the greatest television ever. Nope. Season 2 sucked. Season 3, meh. Season 4, not that good.
Yeah, I only watched season 1. I tried season 2, and I turned it off during episode 2.
Yeah,
I was done.
It goes downhill quite a bit. But here he is remaking Westworld, and it's pretty good.
So. Yeah, it's pretty good for the first season. That's what I was coming to.
Yeah,
all right. So what are we going to do?
What if they do the flood in season 2 of Fallout?
Stop. But that's the thing, is that, you know, Jonathan Nolan, is he like Dave and Dan, where he can, like, you know, the first couple of seasons, great, the next seasons afterwards, not that good. I know he wants to finish Westworld. I don't think we need to leave it alone. It sucked. Well,
I will say there's a big difference between Jonathan Nolan and
Dave and Dan
is that, look, yeah, Jonathan Nolan's later seasons of Westworld were not good. However, I will grant this. When you see him in interviews, you can tell he's been really thinking about the story, and he wants the story to be abstract and risk-taking and breaking new ground. And even though he failed, I at least credit Jonathan Nolan and his wife, who is his partner and everything.
Lisa Joy.
I credit them with taking the risk. So at least there was risk taking with season 2. At least there was risk taking with season 3. At least there was risk taking with season 4. They never played it safe. They were never lazy.
Sure.
D&D, they were definitely lazy and tried to play it safe in those later seasons. And so, like, I think it's a different kind of different thing to compare. Like, these are two people that tried. They really tried.
No, that's fair. But them trying didn't work out for HBO because Westworld was supposed to be the Game of Thrones replacement, and it just wasn't.
Yeah.
It just wasn't there. So that's my – because I like this. I do think it's up there with Last of Us and the first Mortal Kombat film. It's one of the best video game adaptations ever. And hopefully we get a season 2, lickety-split, because I want more. I really do. Yeah.
I don't want them to touch New Vegas. I'm really afraid of
that. They're gonna have to because
people, yeah, like, I know, they set their sights on it, and now they gotta go there.
Boys, I know I've kept you for too long. We're an hour in. Do you mind if we wrap it up here, our New Vegas discussion?
Sounds good.
Guys, thank you so much for joining us. As always, we'll see you all next time. Have a good one.